Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
This podcast exists because of the paid members at decodingtv.com. Become a paid member, get ad-free episodes, early access to episodes, and support podcasts like Decoding TV. Thanks so much to everyone who makes this podcast possible.
It's simple. One of us will have to take our throughput multiplier down the gangway, load the throughput multiplier into the launcher. Then they'll need to hit the green button.
Green button.
And launch it towards the loom. It will dock with the loom, where it will scale the loom's capacity to manage the backlog of branches that was created when someone killed He Who Remains and released all those branches and ruined my life.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Decoding TV. I'm David Chen.
And I'm Patrick Klupik.
Welcome to the podcast. On today's episode of Decoding TV, we're going to be discussing, recapping, reviewing Season 2, Episode 4 of Loki, streaming right now on Disney+. You can find more episodes of this podcast at podcast.decodingtv.com. Email us at decodingtv@gmail.com. We'll start, as usual, with our overall thoughts on the episode, move into a detailed recap and description. Before we get to any of that, though, there's a couple of things I want to mention slash cover. Got a couple of pieces of email and feedback at decodingtv@gmail.com I want to mention. But the first thing I want to actually talk about is something that wasn't covered in emails, and that is that there are many memorable exchanges, in my opinion, that you and I had on last week's podcast, Patrick Klupik. And one of the things I said last week was, you know, you were saying how, oh, you want Loki season two to do something new, you know, to do something that's like, to do a thing that's like interesting and innovative. And I said, I would be happy if it just did a thing. Like, I would be happy if it just had an idea and like followed through on it. Right. And actually this last week, I got to see what a show that does something like that is. And that is the Netflix original series Bodies. It is an 8-part miniseries about time travel and time loops and predestination and so on. And the plot, that is a thing. The plot is, it's very competently put together. It has none of the style of Loki. It has, you know, none of the great banter and rapport that Hiddleston and Wilson have in Loki. It doesn't have the amazing score of Loki. Like, there's a lot of things that are worse than Loki, but from a plot perspective, it is extremely workmanlike in terms of, hey, here are the things we're setting up and we're going to pay them off by the end of the show, and they pay them off. And like, that's there's something I really appreciate about that. So I'm not saying it's a show for everyone. I'm not saying it's a great show necessarily, but it is very solid, very competent. If you're looking for like time travel stuff, I think it's a great option. But again, it's not as good as Loki in many respects, but I just appreciate a show that can follow through on something. Have you heard of the show Bodies on Netflix, Patrick Klupik?
I haven't. It just premiere like in the past?
Yeah, it just debuted like in last week, and I think it's one of the top shows. It looks like a show that was brought over from the UK. It's an 8-part miniseries, and
interesting.
Again, you know, when I talk about that kind of stuff, about like just basic screenwriting of, we're setting all these things up and we're introducing all these ideas, and then by episode 8, you're gonna understand why we put that there. Things that Loki doesn't really do, right? And in general, another component about Bodies that I'll mention is, if something is like revealed later on, if something is like, oh, we're turning the tables and revealing that so and so is actually the doctor, he was the doctor all along, or whatever, like that is very clear to the audience that is going to be a mystery, you know, as opposed to it's just a rug pull and the audience is really confused. Like, oh, I didn't even know I was supposed to be wondering if that person was a doctor. Like, all the stuff in Bodies is like, it's set up as explicitly, this is a mystery. You're not supposed to know what this is. And then eventually they tell you what it is. Like, that's, as opposed to in Loki, it's, hey, you didn't know what that was, huh? You didn't know what that was. You know, it feels like it's constantly trying to, like, one up the audience, even though the audience is just trying to enjoy a good story sometimes. Anyway,
what is the I feel like, because there's so many time travel stories, what is their twist, for lack, you know what I mean? Like,
well, the premise is a dead body is discovered in the same location in four different time periods.
That's a good log line.
The same identical dead body, same age, same face, same method of death. And it's like, and then you follow those four different timelines. So you kind of understand like how they each investigate it in their own time periods.
That's an easy sell. If you were, now granted, obviously the MCU is convoluted as is the nature of a like decades long franchise. But if you had to sit and just summarize Loki in a sentence that was that direct, like, what's the show about? What's cool?
Right.
I could not do it. I could spend half an hour whittling a sentence down and you would just not be able to get something that is that. And it's why I wanted to ask, because like the fact that you responded so strongly to it suggests to me that there is a one line explanation for like what's the deal here? And it's like, a body found, you know, in four different places, four different timelines.
The exact same body found in four different time periods that are like decades apart. And then like,
it's
very ambitious. The show is like trying to like show you how the murder investigation would unfold in four different time periods. And like in some of these time periods, fingerprinting is like a fringe science at the time, you know, like, so it's like, or, you know, doing an autopsy is a bigger deal in some time periods than other, you know, so it's like, it's very ambitious and has like a really good hook, and pretty much everything pays off. Now you can debate how well it pays off, but like, it's like at the end, I felt very satisfied. I felt like, very respected by the storyteller.
It's like an extension of your broader disappointment with a lot of modern television storytelling, especially these franchise things. It's like, look, doesn't have to be a good ending, but just, is it an ending? I'm saying, like, you know, slightly facetiously, but it is, especially a lot of the shows that you and I have covered, especially ones that are in ongoing franchises, there is this inability to just deliver an arc. There is an art to doing an arc that feels satisfying while also making you go, boy, I could see like more here. And I think that's like been a repeated theme of the kind of things that you and I have found had problems with, is just an inability to conceive of an arc that gives you satisfaction in the moment. And for you, it's like, look, man, just give me not even satisfaction, just like end. I could go watch something else and like, that's okay.
Right.
That is an ongoing rarity these days, especially in these giant franchise.
Absolutely. Well, this does remind me of this email we got from David writing into decodingtv@gmail.com. David writes in, I've been enjoying your recaps and discussion, but I've never been so happy as when I heard the term, quote, threatened to overwhelm the plot loom, end quote, so perfectly summarize our shared concerns for the series, end quote. I believe that's a Patrick Klepek coining.
Even if it's wrong. I'll assume the credit now, because I agree. I don't remember saying that, nor do I remember you saying that, but that does seem pretty clever, and I'm here
Patrick
to grab
basically
it as my own.
Literally retains zero memory of any of our conversations.
No, I think I'm just... I have a very low opinion of myself as
the podcast leaves zero residual taste in his mouth when he does the
much thing. Like the ending of a Loki episode.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Not this one.
Okay. Anyway, Rob F. writes into decodingtv@gmail.com. Let us know where you're from when you're writing in, please. Rob writes into decodingtv@gmail, in your discussion about episode 3, Patrick made a point to discuss the episode's highlighting of Chicago geography. However, I was surprised neither of you mentioned the thing which I found to be most distracting, which is the way Chicago's geography was presented makes absolutely no sense. At one point, Victor says, we must return to my lab across the lake. So I'm thinking to myself, interesting. I guess we're going to Michigan. Nope.
Yeah, no, his lab, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
His lab is in Wisconsin. Not what yeah. I would describe as across the lake. Later, when Renslayer and Victor are on the ferry traveling north, we see the World's Fair in the background off the starboard side of the ship, putting it to their east. But if they're traveling north to Wisconsin, Chicago should be to the west off the port side of the ferry. Are either of these world-breaking errors? No. But in my opinion, they point to a larger issue with Loki Season 2 and the MCU in general lately, which is that most of their projects don't seem to pay enough attention to the little details. If they can't even keep straight which side of the lake Chicago is on, how can I have faith in their ability to interweave so many new characters into a single narrative? I can't. Anyway, that is the email from Rob, writing to decodingtv@gmail.com. Wow, really? Really, your comment last week about the show taking place in Chicago is aging like fine milk in a hot car.
It is a fair point as it is made. I would only just go as far as to say I don't know that I would necessarily indict the storytelling of the show associated with not understanding that was the geography relations of Illinois and Wisconsin, because I don't know how many like Wisconsin and Illinois people necessarily respect the geography and our relative locations of Illinois and Wisconsin as well. So I think that may just be like a steady tension there. But it is true that when you do say across the lake, you can actually, you know, if you have a boat, you can actually take, like I've known like people who have rented boats, and you can take it out of, you know, downtown Chicago, and you actually can drive over to Michigan and back again. But it's true. That is, I didn't put that together in watching the show. That's on me. I was not necessarily thinking about the direction of the boat at the time, but I appreciate the listeners of Decoding TV keeping us honest, David. That's all I ask.
Absolutely. You know what this reminded me of? Do you remember James Cameron making Titanic, and they built this like scale model of the ship, but the way that it was constructed, it was actually like the ship was pointing in the wrong direction when compared to real life, like in the shoot it was facing the wrong direction compared to real life. So what they did was they reversed every single thing in that shot. So like all the luggage tags, all the writing that's on signs or on the cars or whatever,
they
custom made every component of that scene so that it could all be reversed when they were actually the final film. So
incredible.
That it could match what was real. But that is apparently not the, someone couldn't even bother to ask someone to make a phone call to someone from Chicago and ask, is this where Wisconsin would be, relatively speaking, for Loki Season
2? I don't think people are taking boats from Illinois to Wisconsin. You'd have to go all the way. Like, Milwaukee and Madison aren't on the water. I don't think they're close enough. So you wouldn't. You could go to a weird rural town on the east side of Wisconsin, which, well, good luck. Have fun there. Don't say you're from Illinois when you show up there.
I will agree with you that I don't think this should be an indictment of the storytelling. Like, I think I think that like the below the line craftsmanship is often very disconnected from the storytelling, from like the, you know, screenwriting and so on. So, like, at its best, in a movie's like, let's say, Killers of the Flower Moon, those things are like intricately tied together. But I have a feeling that they're not as tied together for a show like Loki. It just varies depending on the production.
Also, like, the World's Fair is right there. It's like, well, like, we want it in the shot. You know what I mean? I can just see someone just like, we want it in the shot. Like, that's not yeah, worried about
exactly,
it too much.
Exactly. And who's going to care? The people, those malcontents on Decoding TV?
No. They listen to this. We're like, we're good. We made it right past them. Like, then we're gone. Yeah. We're fine with GTFO. Most of the audience.
It's okay. We got a Chicago stand in Patrick Klepek, and he's gonna overlook.
I'm from the northwest suburbs. I need this clear in the podcast. I am not from Chicago, and so I feel like I can't be held to the standard of. But I should understand. Well, you know, it's fine. It's fine.
He's gonna overlook all the glaring errors. Okay. Anyway. All right. Thank you for your emails at decodingtv@gmail.com. And of course, you can always comment as well at decodingtv.com. Patrick Klepek, let's discuss Loki Season 2, Episode 4. As usual, let's start by talking about our overall thoughts, and then let's get into the detailed recap. What did you think overall of this episode?
Well, before I get there, I want to express some profound disappointment. You know, the last couple of episodes, David, you have asked me, and I always forget, could you write a little ditty at the beginning to introduce yourself. And I always forget, and then I panic, and I write something. And last night I remembered, and I wrote one last night. And then I was scrambling to introduce myself at the beginning of the podcast.
But then I didn't prompt you for it.
And I wasn't ready for it. I was like waiting for David to do his little thing. And okay. Then you're like, and I'm like, and. So if you hear any scare and tension in my voice when I introduced myself, it was because I was waiting for my mark and I didn't hit it.
That's 100% my bad. Grossly unprofessional on my part. Why don't we just do the introduction again right now?
Again, okay.
Let's do it right now. Let's do it again. All right, okay. You ready?
Yeah.
Okay. Let me see. all right, here we go. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Decoding TV. I'm David Chen, and I promise this will all make sense in the end.
And
joining me today is Patrick Cuff.
I fucked it up.
Joining me today is Patrick Klepek. Are you okay?
I don't know. I don't know, dude. I'm feeling weirdly hungry for some spaghetti at the moment. Oh!
That was worth it. That was worth it, Patrick. That was worth it. Okay. All right. Well, anyway, that's my bet. Usually, I do, just for those who are like curious for behind the scenes, I do a little check-in at the beginning of the podcast. Be like, did you write an opening statement? And then I'll prompt you for it. And I didn't do the check-in, so then I didn't prompt. And then now we end up with this mess where we're 15 minutes into the podcast and we haven't started the recap yet.
It's called riffing.
Indeed, indeed. Okay. All right. Patrick Klepek, what did you think of season 2, episode 4 of Loki?
Certainly, I would say the strongest episode, I think, since the pilot. It has some genuine, I think, as I messaged you after watching it, like, hey, this episode's got some real, spit out your coffee, spit out your water, spit out your beer kind of moments that caught me.
Patrick Klepek texted me and he said, I spit out my coffee on two separate occasions.
I got it mostly back in, but it was like, what?
Yeah.
And I think those
Which left me guessing what those moments would be. I'm looking forward to finding out what those moments are. But yes.
Yeah, I'm one of them, I think, is fairly obvious. I'm curious if the other one lined up for you as well as being that sort of moment. But I think that's like a really strong through line. It ends in a, I would say, like one of the things that, you know, you and I discussed and one thing that you've harped on quite a bit, and I think understandably so, is the rug pulls, in which there are these like onion-like, well, onion is more generic because an onion is like, you kind of know where you're going and there's another layer there. Often here it's like, it's rug pulls, right? It's surprises, it's gotcha moments. And those can be effective if done artfully. And I think what, we've seen, especially in season 2, and often it just feels arbitrary and like woven into the DNA of the show in a way that I don't think has to be there. And even though this episode ends on a like a real WTF moment, it's like one I'm intrigued by. Like, I cannot wait to like see the opening shot of the next episode.
Right.
I don't know where this series is going for the next two episodes in a, at least to me, like a really exciting way. And I mean that in two ways. One, I've kind of felt like I knew what the arc of the show was going to be over these six. And especially in regards to like the Victor Timely character. And I just wasn't all that interested in that show. Certainly not helped by some of the curious performance choices by for Victor Timely. And then also just the distance away from giving any real weight to like Mobius and the fact that he's a variant and B-15 and the fact that she wants to find out like all this other stuff that I find way more interesting. Loki and Sylvie, just like no time for any of this. Like, we got to work on this Kang and his emotional problems as he learns about what's happening in this world. And now, like, you know, A lot of different things could happen. It's a kind of a interesting blank slate for the series. I'm excited to potentially be disappointed by what it does with that blank slate. So let's leave that possibility is out there. But even just moment to moment, I found the character moments in this episode strong. I found the elements of horror strong. This show walks right up to the edge of whatever you would call depicting violence in the MCU. And yeah, I just I ended up having a really great time. The Victor Timely stuff like worked better for me in this episode, maybe because there's just a lot less of it, so the individual moments were stronger. Plus, also he's more of a character at this point, and so I think 2 and 3 were pretty weak from a storytelling perspective. Even though episode 3 had very strong and exciting production values, it was just fun to watch the show. But in terms of hey, what's going on here beyond just I like the banter, which is always strong and always good. Is there something else beneath the surface? Am I enjoying from getting from A to Z? I enjoyed getting from A to Z in this episode the most that I have since everything was sort of table set in the pilot, or I guess the first episode rather.
So here's what I'll say about Loki season 2, episode 4. I agree with you. There are multiple holy crap moments in the episode that are just, it's just great moments. Like individual moments are wonderful and I can't wait to talk with you about them. In my opinion, episodes like this are why this podcast exists, so we can like react and talk about it. And so you as a listener can enjoy, you know, communing with people after watching something that has some really bold stuff in it, you know, an episode that has some really bold stuff in it. I am also curious about where the show is going. And at this point, we basically have no sense of it. I mean, I think I had to check the episode numbers and be like, is this the finale of the, you know, like, is this,
and this is all the critics were sent, right? Like, so the reviews came out, you know, for folks that did like season reviews, you know?
Yeah. This is all that I was being facetious. Like, you know,
right.
There's a couple more episodes, but I'm like, is it really, how are they going to even continue this? Cause where they end it feels pretty definitive, in this episode, but here's what I'll say about the episode. So my experience of watching it was overall very strong. I was cackling multiple times during the episode. I was just like, that's incredible what I'm watching right now. I think this episode is the best of what this show can offer.
Yeah.
But also I have a number of systemic, deep-seated issues with what this show can offer, do you know, that I've already tried to articulate over the course of the last couple episodes. It also has all the flaws of what this show can offer, which are being really in the weeds about the literal mechanics of, you know, the temporal loom and like how the TVA works and introducing character ideas at the beginning of the episode that like, or like barely introducing them at the beginning of the episode and then like trying to have them pay off by the end of the episode in a way that feels very clunky. Like all that stuff is going on in this episode as well, and really reveals the shortcomings of the show. But despite all that, I had a great time watching the episode. So like it's I agree with you. It's the best of what the show can offer. It has some really compelling stuff to offer. And it also has some really significant flaws that we will discuss momentarily. So those are our overall thoughts on season 2, episode 4 of Loki.
Life is full of what ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
All right, Patrick Klepek, let's get into it. Let's dive into our what happened this episode. The episode opens with Miss Minutes and Renslayer at the end of time, where Renslayer learns she was a critical commander in the Multiversal War. But instead of sitting by He Who Remains aside, her reward was her and everyone else at the TVA having her mind erased. let's pause here. This is the payoff for the thing that was introduced last episode, right? Like the secret that Miss Minutes knows. And at this point, Miss Minutes and Renslayer is like, hey, we don't need He Who Remains. We can run the TVA ourselves. Why do we need that guy? You know? And it's fine. You know, I have no issue with that as a reveal. Like, I guess you had a moderate reaction to the fact that it's kind of dangling this plot thread that's going to pay off this episode. Like, what did you think of the payoff?
Yeah, I guess this theory could still pan out. I guess there's no reason it couldn't. My pet theory had been that Renslayer was a Kang variant.
And
it's, I suppose, still could be true. Like, there's nothing,
right.
Even though all depictions of Kang are, you know, the actor Jonathan Majors in different outfits, there's nothing about the character, especially as depicted by Loki and all other variant, like all of season one of Loki was, look, there's frog Loki. There's like female, like there's no reason that Kang has to look like Jonathan Majors other than just that's the way that they've depicted the character so far. So that had been my pet theory. Like, oh, and they were going to find out that he's been manipulating other Kangs through the multiverse to do his bidding. And again, like that still could be true. This version at least provides, I mean, it's obvious what it's providing, which is like, hey, like, why is she so like emotional motivation for this character that has been sorely lacking the entire season, in which this character like Renslayer is bouncing around acting as an antagonist with no emotional juice explaining why,
right.
Like, you know, it's how we end up in awkward conversations with Renslayer and Morbius, but like they really think like we should be working together, and even Victor Timely pointing out like,
yes,
really feels like we should all be working together.
Don't we all want the same, literally the same thing?
And that is a failure of the storytelling to produce appropriate tension and conflict so that those conversations don't seem really goofy to the audience.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of my favorite YouTube channels is Pitch Meeting with Ryan George. Have you seen the Pitch Meetings? And he has this catch. It's an amazing series of where he pretends to be Hollywood executives pitching each other a movie. And then he like reveals all of the flaws of the movie during the pitch meeting. And he has a saying that we now say a lot in this household, which is like, whenever there's a big plot leap that needs to happen, he'll say something like, super easy, barely an inconvenience. That's the saying, is like, super easy, barely an inconvenience. It turns out there's a simple explanation for that. And the super easy, barely an inconvenience happened probably a couple times this episode, but the one thing that really struck me was, how does Renslayer get back to the TVA? Did they like explain that, or was that even a hard thing for her? Like, because she just shows up in the jail, as far as I can recall. Miss Minutes is like, hey, I can work with you now. And I guess together the two of them figure out a way to get them back to the TVA. But it's just like, hey, isn't Renslayer been banished to the end of time by Sylvie? Like, you know, didn't Sylvie send her there to punish her? And now she's just back all of a sudden. You know, it's like, okay. And then she's gone by the end of the episode, too. So super easy, barely an inconvenience that Renslayer's back. Anyway, I would agree with you. This gives decent motivation for Renslayer's actions this episode, but we don't have any motivation for Renslayer's actions in the previous episode. And also, even still, both Renslayer and Mobius and Loki want the same thing, which is to not let the TVA completely self-destruct. Right.
So right, it's like, but at least there would have been more understandable ideological tension between, like, that's essentially like this. The show is trying to, at various points, be like, hey, there's an ideological and philosophical tension on what the TVA, are we trying to uphold the mission that was or the mission that we're defining now in the moment? And it's very easy to understand like why that would be a thread to pull on during this season, but you would
it's not clarified.
No, it's four episodes in. I would have loved for Renslayer to have had this motivation at the beginning of this season to make her feel like a real strong antagonist. Like why does she still care about the TV? Why does she still care about this as an institution? Well, yeah, like, okay, this would make sense. This is my spot. I deserve to run. You know what I mean? Like that, you know, fuck this Kang guy. Like I'm going to do this. I did this. I won the multiverse. Like that's decent motivation for a character. Yeah. And it's really, you know, like points back to your, you know, common criticism of like backfilling motivation right, through reveals.
It almost feels like they figured out that idea like halfway through the season and they're like, okay, we'll add that in. But like, imagine if it had come at the end of last season somehow, or at the beginning of this season, then we'd be like, oh, okay, like that makes more sense. And now it's like, what? Now it comes in as a surprise. And I guess it kind of gives some motivation to her, but right, you know, does it really change the plot that much? It's a missed opportunity. So anyway, at the TVA, Victor Timely tries to understand the world he's been dropped into. Mobius and Loki convince him to help after Timely hears the TVA's loom breaking down. Timely and OB meet face-to-face and are mutually impressed with each other's work. OB has come up with a plan to expand the loom to accommodate the expanding branches, and Timely believes it's possible to use one of his prototypes to make it all work. I like the idea of, hey, you inspired my work. Actually, you inspired my work. Like, that's a cool, like, loop idea that's in many time travel things. And there's this whole introduction of, here's how this works. You need to go out there with this goober, as they would call in Across the Spider-Verse. Go out there with the goober and press the button and do the thing. And then it, like, undercuts, it, like, subverts that, right? Like, at the end of the episode, which I love. I wish the show hadn't spent so much of the rest of its time being so involved with these plot mechanics. Like, the first episode is virtually incomprehensible with how much, like, plot mechanics it throws at you. Like, you got to go out there and do this and do this and do that. You know, it's like, okay, you know, and now it's doing it again, but it's undercutting it. Imagine if there had been no other plot mechanics and this was the first time they were like, you got to go out and do this thing. And then, like, when it's undercut, then it's, like, more impactful that way, as opposed, in my opinion. But it's just so complicated. It's like, okay, you got to attach the thing to the thing. And it's like, well, that will take time to incorporate. And then Victor Timely is like, you can do it. You know, it's like, why do we even need to introduce that as a plot mechanic? I guess they want to, like, make it so that OB and Victor Timely need to work on something together during the course of the episode. But
yeah, they seem to recognize they need, like, almost a gimmick for every time they're going to revisit this kind of technical exposition dump that needs to, or at least they feel like it needs to occur. Here, it doesn't feel like it really needs, I feel like it's pretty, like, we already did this with Loki. Like, Loki went out there and shot the, so I feel like you did that. You set that up, I loved the gimmick. Like, Obi apologizing for only doing one layer of paint and not having enough figures for everybody is like a really funny gimmick. It gives that actor, like, great material to work with. It's truly funny. It just ends up going on for way longer than it needs to, and it's again one of these instances in the show where it's chewing up time over this, like, ironically for a show about time that could have been spent doing anything else. And still, in an episode that I think is largely pretty effective, and I think you put it well in saying effective at being the show that it is, rather than the show that I think you and I would sometimes want it to be. But if this is what it is, like, this is a great encapsulation of what can it accomplish. But even embedded within that are moments, I think, wasted where there is just slack that could be either tightened or given to give other scenes a little more room to breathe, characters more room to breathe. And they just seem, I it's totally understandable because, like we said, it's hard to explain what this show is trying to accomplish or what the premise is in a single line. So I'm sympathetic to a writer's room sitting back and going, okay, what does the audience know? What are we afraid that they're losing the plot? Like, it's been two episodes. Do we need to do another explainer? And that's in many ways an indictment of, well, the premise is only here because you chose the premise, right? I mean, obviously there's Kevin Feige. Like, I mean, like, it's not as simple as that, but there are probably more effective ways to accomplish what they did here, even though I appreciate the lengths gone to like, there's going to be some portion of the audience that already knows what's going on. What are they entertained by? Well, you're right. I am entertained by the little miniatures and the model. And, like, that's a great way to show it. But it's just overly lengthy. And I think you could have come up with a better way of communicating at the end of the day what it is, which is Obi and Timely working together on a thing. Do you have to really explain that? Just like, oh, we need help with the loom. You know what I mean? Like, it just didn't have to be this far down the rabbit hole.
Exactly. I 100% agree there. I did think it was a Back to the Future homage, by the way, the model, right? Like, Doc Brown in Back to the Future says, please excuse the crudity of this model. I didn't have time to paint it or build it to scale, basically. And so it's a very similar line that OB utters. And I love that they're paying tribute to the things that inspired them. Mobius, Sylvie, and Loki leave the group to work while Mobius proposes having a pie break. That causes Sylvie to snap at Mobius' indifference to the destruction of billions of lives at the hands of the TVA's incompetence. Later, they end up in the infamous pie room anyways. Loki and Sylvie try to work out their feelings on being gods, playing gods, and wrestling with their responsibility to the branch timelines that exist. I actually like this interaction overall. And there's a great line at the end where she says, "It sounds like you're playing God." And he says, "We are gods." And that's just a great classic line. You know, I love that. Sylvie really doth protest too much for someone who was working at McDonald's a few episodes ago. You know, like she's just chilling, working at McDonald's. And then you want to get, she's working like five shifts a week at McDonald's. And then she's like, "You want to get pie in this moment?" I guess her priorities really have changed over time.
Well, and she told that guy that she was going to be back there the next morning. I don't know how time works, passes in the TVA relative to these branches, but I feel like somebody missed their shift, Sylvie. And that kid, who you seem kind of concerned about, like, didn't see, you weren't confident that car was going to show up. I felt like maybe some concern about the relationship with like the mom at home. I was getting a weird vibe there with the way that she kind of, Sylvie, kind of a parent. You know, I'm just saying, Sylvie, you could be back on that timeline, like flipping those burgers, and you're not. You're here yelling about the pie. But I'm with you. I think it's a good scene. That said, I'm like at the conclusion of season one, you know, they're sort of in love, right? Like, and it's like a funny way to reflect Loki as a character's like self-loving, egotistical nature. I think him falling for another version of himself is just a deliciously appropriate comic booky thing that I found like really natural for the character. And I gotta be honest, like I'm less interested in hearing them bicker over the nature of the ethics of the multiverse and branch timelines as much as I just wish they would talk to each other about each other.
There's a little bit
of that happening here, but I guess I just worry. It's like for every time we do this, it's a moment that they can't talk to each other about themselves. And now granted, some of this is in this conversation is them talking about themselves through this like broader topic, but I still feel like it's an extension of there's characters talking in a room having a moment, but we're still talking about like the multiverse and the timelines as opposed to more grounded human stuff that I wish it spent a little more time with.
You know, say what you will about the tenets of the TVA, at least it's an ethos, is what I have to say about it. And I actually didn't mind it. Honestly, this is just an analogy, so don't get upset. But I'm just saying, like, it reminded me of conversations I've heard between, like, Bernie Sanders supporters and Joe Biden supporters. I'm just going to put that out there. Or, like, you know, Democrats and anarchists or whatever. You know, I'm not saying those are equivalent either. Like,
sure.
The Bernie Bros. But I'm saying, like, there's people who want to improve the existing system, and there's people who want to destroy the system we have and rebuild from nothing. And what we've been asking for, Patrick, is for people to like actually clarify what their views are on these things. And I'm grateful that the show actually did that in this case. Whether it will do anything with that, I have no confidence, but like it actually did clarify what these people think about the TVA. And I think that's actually worthwhile. And I think it does. Now, you know, are they going to do anything with it? Does it actually make any sense given what we know about Loki's character until this point?
Or Sylvie's, right? Sylvie is not an anarchist. Sylvie was like essentially like free will, but free will as it currently stands, everyone's going to burn. Well, maybe we should just let her burn. I was like, I think that's a logical leap for you, Sylvie. I don't know if that's where you ended up at the end of the first season, based on my interpretation of your character.
Well, maybe her thinking about it is flawed.
Look, radicalized over the course of the events of this show. I can buy that.
Yeah. So anyway, it did strike me like, okay, whether or not it makes sense that those characters got to that point, at least now we have a clear articulation of what they think. And there's some dueling ideologies that's more than just whoever Sylvie happens to feel like killing or not killing that week. You know, like
sure.
So it has gone beyond that point, and I'm grateful for that. In the TVA brig, X5 tries to sell General Dox and the other renegade hunters on deserving a spot on the sacred timeline. It's at this point that B-15 gives her big pitch on saving this new TVA and leaves the room hoping it's landed with them. Then Miss Minutes and Renslayer propose that General Dox, X5, and the other become their personal army and secure life on the sacred timeline. Everyone but X5 refuse the offer and are subsequently killed in horrifying fashion using the TVA's torture device. When B-15 discovers what's happened, she realizes that she can't communicate with her tempad and that something is going wrong at the TVA. So, again, curious how, like, Renslayer made it there. Like, maybe I missed an explanation, so that's, like, my bad if I did. Patrick, did you catch it as well? Like, how Renslayer
I think the short is just Miss Minutes is... I think that's a Miss Minutes hand wave. Like, yeah,
she's all powerful. Okay. The other thing that I wish had been better set up is, like, why are General Dox's people important? It looks like she has about 20 guys in there, you know? Like, and it's like, how many people even work at the TVA? Is it, like, 50,000? Is it, like, 30?
It looks big. Like, and that's, so we spend so much time in what I would probably discover, like describe as, I don't know, the main government building of whatever this space is.
It looks like there's thousands of people. It looks like there's
thousands. So when Loki is running around and there's that taxi and there's the statue, I mean, there's a civilization. I mean, like, this is this is a metropolis. And the way the show conveys the TVA, though, is shot very, like, constrained, minimalist in this one area. But the shots we get of the rest of it is, like, there are so many people living lives doing, I don't know what else they're doing here. It seems like a lot of the important stuff happens in this building, but they're here.
This is the kind of stuff that I feel like the show just drops the ball on, is, like, if you want us to have some tension, some emotional stakes around whether or not General Dox accepts the request, you have to do a good job of explaining why it's important that General Dox accepts the request. And the show basically does not do that, right? It's like, you got to get General Dox's people on our side because they're so important. Why? Because of reasons that we said it's important. That's why. But, like, you can imagine a situation where General Dox has, like, 10,000 guys at her disposal or whatever, you know? And, like, yes, that would be harder from a visual effects perspective, but it would at least convey why this particular decision is important.
You could just say they're hiding in the branches. You know what I mean? Like, there are hand-wavy ways that, like, they're in hiding. Like, they'll come out if they get the signal.
Or we stored them, we spread them out strategically over 30 cells, like in Andor, you know? Like, I'm just saying, like,
they're in little boxes. Have you seen these boxes we have? Right. They're terrifying, but we put them all in those boxes.
Exactly. You've make some mention of, like, hey, but, like, I think the show just didn't want to deal with any of that. They didn't want to make decisions about how big the TVA is or how many people. So they're just like, all right, they're important because we say so, and it's her and, like, 10 guys, basically. It's her and, like, 20 guys. All that said, I like the, you know, and why would General Dox refuse to do it? You know, also unclear. But what is clear is that the show does do a good job of setting up is X5. Wanting to go back to the timeline. Like, we understand from episode 2, he liked life back in his human form, and basically Renslayer is offering to put him back into the Matrix, right? So it makes sense that he would betray everyone else. And then the way in which everyone is killed is, like, truly horrifying. I'm guessing this is one of the coffee spitting out moments.
Yeah, because I kept waiting for, okay, it's going to cut. Okay, we're going to cut.
It did cut. It was very tasteful how they did it.
But it still went further than I was expecting. Like,
it was mostly a sound design thing. It was mostly because you see no blood. You see no remains. It's mostly just you see the box shrinking, and then you hear people screaming, and then you're just left to imagine everything else. There is even an amazing shot later when X-15 comes back in, and she opens up her tempad, and it shows it from her POV, and her tempad is covering the view of all the dead people.
Blech.
And I was just like, oh, that's very tasteful. Like, they showed almost nothing. They let you imagine everything. And that's a really well done sequence for a Disney Plus series. You know what
I'm
saying?
It is. It is. Yeah. And I thought it did a better job. I thought it did a pretty good job of conveying, like, the betrayal that was upon this character, like, what they just chose to do. Like, I think the show has done a pretty poor job of like really harping on this, I think, really like rich storytelling vein of yes. like having a spot on the sacred timeline. What does it mean? You know, every time we revisit, you know, Mobius, like, why haven't you seen where, like, what your life was like? Like, we've explored all of that through this one character. And while I wish they had done so much more, and I wish that was a bigger focus of the show, like, this moment lands the metaphorical plane on this character really, really well. And I think there's an excellent payoff on that in this episode, like, consequences of that choice. Like, that is another great payoff. Like, later, like, it's one of those moments where it's like, hey, a lot of the threads in this show, I'm worried about, they feel like they're just going to keep dangling, much like the loom ever expanding and its branches. But this one, it feels like they snipped it pretty well. And like, it ends in a place that is terrifying, but also understandable. Like, you know, the people in that room, you know, General Dox and the folks under her, like, well, they don't understand what's tempting about it, but man, we saw his life.
Yeah.
That seemed pretty fun. Like, seemed like he was like fulfilled and happy and had motivations, and like, that's nothing that these folks at the TVA have, because they don't know what they don't have. And so I thought they do a really good job for a character that I was worried that was going to get kind of sidelined, and does get sidelined for various reasons. It was cool to see that they found a way to get that character into a place that was like, I don't know about I'm empathetic, but I understand why the character landed where they did. And I found that really satisfying in a show that doesn't have a ton of those moments, especially as we're still two episodes out and we don't know how these other characters are going to end up.
I'm glad you're pointing that out, because the way the show shoots the horrifying thing is a huge part of it is locked in on his reaction to it.
Yeah.
And that's what's amazing. That's why you hire someone like Rafael Casal, is like, he can convey the extreme ambivalence he feels seeing all of his coworkers getting crushed into a tiny cube.
You know, like, I'm not sure. I don't know if I describe it as ambivalence, but I think what you see in his face is, it's worth it. This is what I am doing. I think he accepts that what he is doing is horrible, and he knows he is a horrible person as a result.
Mm-hmm.
But it's worth it. Like, that that spot, going back to that, it is worth leaving this behind. I don't think he's
sure. I guess that's what I'm trying to say, is like, he has conflicting emotions. Yeah, it's horrible, but it's worth it. You know, that's what I mean to say.
Gotcha.
But yeah, it's a great performance. It's like a wonderful moment in the show, and does a great job. It's like, arguably more effective than showing a box of little bones and blood and everything like that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like,
I don't need to see the he and she who may remain from that box at the end of it. You know? I don't need to see the
he or she who remains. Remains.
I don't know what kind of remains. How much does the box, does it turn it into dust at the end? It seemed like the reaction. Like, I was trying to think of the mechanic. Like, there's a reason you wouldn't depict it, because there's too many questions. You know, like, we just, you know, like, wouldn't be able to answer it.
I imagine like a rectangular plexiglass, just like completely solid red, because it's full of like bones and viscera and blood and everything like that. You know, that's what I imagine. So
Pinhead would be proud.
Indeed. But great moment. One of the most horrifying things I think we've seen depicted in any Marvel thing.
The closest that Marvel, you know, there was the wonderful Werewolf by Night last Halloween. That they just oddly released in color, which I think is mostly just an extension of, we need things to, taken away from things for us to put out. That black and white thing, put it in color.
Put it on in color. Yeah.
Michael Giacchino did one. It was a great little, if you haven't seen it, because on Disney Plus, like, it's an awesome little addition to that world. But even that is like, it's not that violent. It's not that upsetting. It's just not what this world does. And frankly, the way they get away with it is just like you said, they can't show it. And so I think it, for you and I, for like adult viewers, or even like teenage viewers, we can fill in those blanks. If like my kid is like hot and cold with like superhero stuff, and is certainly not invested enough to watch the second season of the Loki show to like at that level of keeping up. But were I to watch that with my 7-year-old, I don't even know how it would be upsetting, but it wouldn't be upsetting in the way it is to you and I, because there's just no way for her to conceptualize like how bad it is, which is kind of the genius of the shot, right? It's like, you're too young to know why this is fucking disgusting. And that's great for you. I'm so happy for you. You're seven.
Yeah. You haven't been, you're too young to understand why this is one of the worst things that's ever been shown on screen. The only thing that comes close in terms of psychological body horror that I can think of is, remember in, I want to say it was either Infinity War, Avengers Infinity War, when somebody gets the Reality Stone and like turns Mantis into like a bunch of ribbons. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well,
which, by the way, is also something that happens in this episode. So this episode has two of the most horrifying things that have ever happened in the MCU, which I really appreciate. And you could argue the snap and people vanishing, but that's not nearly as like gross as
that's
like
emotion. That's emotionally.
Yeah, that's emotionally difficult. Yeah. But, you know, the only thing worse than being crushed to death by a box is being crushed to death in a box with all of your coworkers. That's the thing that I can't
imagine.
Please
give me my own box, you know?
Please give me my own box to die in. That's all I am asking for.
I want a four-day work week. I want, like, good health insurance, subsidized by the government, and I want my own coffin, my own digital coffin box to be crushed in when I'm done with
what is a coffin if not, like, a need for an individual box to die in, you know? Like,
show some respect.
Exactly. Absolutely. Absolutely. Anyway, great scene. One of the greatest. I'm glad we spent so much time talking about it because definitely worth reacting over. Okay. While marveling over a machine that can dispense hot cocoa, a hunter guarding Victor Timely is pruned by X5 and kidnaps Timely. Obi realizes the reason their tempads aren't working is because Miss Minutes is back and messing with the TVA systems. While they scramble for a solution, Timely buys time with Renslayer and Miss Minutes by convincing them he can help them out. It's at this point that we transition to a scene from earlier this season when Loki was scrambling through a dying TVA trying to find a way to stop himself from time slipping. We learn the person who pruned Loki was actually Loki? The loop completed, Loki and Sylvie pick up a mysterious object, a telephone, and communicate with Obi. Obi suggests rebooting the system and turning off all the safety measures of the TVA, including ones that prevent the use of magic. All right, let's pause here to talk about this for a second. So I don't know what our reaction was supposed to be to this moment, because basically this moment is a payoff for a series of shots that occur in episode one, where, you know, Loki is trying to stop the time slipping, and they do Obi's plan, and Obi gives them the little stopwatch with the red and the green circles, semicircles. And then we kind of see brief glimpses of the TVA. We see a glimpse of Loki getting pruned. We see a glimpse of Sylvie in the elevator. And then we see Loki and Mobius crashing into the TVA, you know, from the temporal loom. It's a cool moment. It's a shocking moment. But the stuff that was introduced early on was, I'm just going to say, so confusing that, like, in the first episode, that I don't know that it really pays off in an aha way that I think the people who created the show were hoping for. Patrick Klepek, what's your reaction to this?
I agree with you that it's not as aha as maybe they're hoping for. More for me, the way it's shot, the music, it's very like somber and melancholy and sad in a way. Mm-hmm. And like, there's not like the mechanics of like what's occurring are not like sad or like, he's saving him, like he's saving him. Like you're completing, like it just didn't really, there are moments in the show where it's like using its like synthesizer, like soundtrack to like make you feel something. And I just, there wasn't anything to be felt in this moment. I guess the idea of pruning yourself feels like when said out loud, I'm like, yeah, I guess that would be kind of weird to have to sneak up on oneself, but it becomes very obvious what he needs to do in that moment. It's not like you're killing yourself. You're actually saving. So I don't know. It was shot in a sad sort of way. And instead it was just sort of, no, we're just sort of closing the literal loop on a plot, you know, device from early this season. And so I don't know. It felt like it was played as a bigger moment than how it lands for me as the viewer when I was watching it.
I think the way to, you really want to do a scene like this, and by the way, you know, this is kind of the stuff I'm talking about with the Netflix series Bodies, that like it does do stuff like what I'm about to say, which is you show that scene from earlier in the season with more context, like make it make sense of like, and then when we get to it again, we're like, oh, now I understand why we saw the thing earlier. You know, like, instead, earlier in the season, episode one, it was like we saw these brief flashes of things that didn't really make any sense to us at all. Like, it honestly felt like it could have been a dream sequence, what we saw earlier on. So as a result, I think this was... There's not much here other than the aha of it's Loki pruning himself, right?
Yeah. Or if they could have talked, right? Like a lot of the show has been exchanges between different, like, if, you know, the shot that the show chooses is one of surprise, like pruned from the back. But if you could have had 30 seconds where it's like, hey, got to prune you. Like, remember the whole thing? Like, you're going to die. You know, like, there could have been a moment. And frankly, it seemed like a moment that was more humorous than dark and sad and dramatic. And so I just sort of fundamentally disagreed with the portrayal of that scene because it just didn't land for me how they were wanting me to feel. And I actually thought a different route that was like a banter between these two, like, it's, you know, Loki coming full circle on himself is, I don't know. It could have gone a different route.
Now I'm also going to put this out there, Patrick Klepek, in a different show, I would say the following, trust in the show, it's all going to make sense in the end. Right. Like, all the emotional and all the plot machinations will all make sense in the end. I don't know if it will. But it is possible in the next two episodes we'll find out more details about which Loki was where during what time and, like, what led to Loki pruning himself in this episode. And at the end, it will all snap together and we'll be like, oh, wow, that was brilliant the way it did that.
There could be a third Loki, right?
It's distinctly, like, possible. So I just want to leave that open that, like...
Yeah, you're definitely right.
That's possible. It's very possible that, like, we'll be like... But as of right now, it's, like, not a particularly satisfying...
I mean, he does say Loki there is pruning. A line that I can't tell if that's... He says, like, oh, it all makes sense
it
later.
It will all make sense. Maybe, like, in the next two episodes... I mean, you know, the episode ends with the whole... multiverse being destroyed, so I have a feeling that's actually not gonna be where the MCU ends. Is with Loki
news, like, we've canceled Thunderbolts, like, with all none of these yeah, happening. Yeah. Sorry,
is with turns Loki's, out Loki season 2 episode 4. I don't think that's where it's over. So, so again, highly possible there's gonna be something that explains the Loki pruning himself scene, and then maybe when we go back to episode 1, we watch it again, we'll be like, oh my gosh. All the clues are there. It's incredible now. You know, like, so I am very open to that idea.
God, it'd be so funny if, like, you know, at the end of most MCU projects, it, you know, you get to the end of the credits and it says, like, oh, Loki will return or the Eternals will continue. But just at the end of this one, it's like, the MCU will not continue.
It's over.
It's just like, so we decided right in the middle of this one, we're done. Sorry, I think it's too much.
Rebooting the system means Miss Minutes loses access to the TVA, but as she disappears, she cryptically says to Timely that he'll never be him. Soon after, Sylvie uses her powers to mind control X5 and prune Renslayer. They rescue Timely and sprint towards the temporal loom. Let's pause here for a moment. The execution of these scenes is awesome. Like, Miss Minutes rebooting herself, like, that was amazing. You know, like, the way she changes all the colors and then, like, becomes, like, the basic, like, ASCII art clock and all that stuff is incredible. Like, you can, she's like, starts like losing her power. It's gradual. It happens over time. And so I thought it was amazing. Like, just, this is like the show at its best in terms of design and CG and, you know, voice acting and so on. So really good stuff there. The comment about he'll never be him, I don't know if that's setting up something else. I thought it was a very clumsy way of, like, setting up this subplot of Victor Timely wanting to be he who remains and failing, like, not living up to the man he could be, which I think has been very poorly established, but is kind of what I think they're getting at, because there's this moment at the end where he says, time to be brave. And so it's like, he's trying to be the he who remains we all knew he always could be. That's what I thought that was. Patrick Klepek, do you have any thoughts on, like, the he'll never be him?
Yeah, that I don't know, because, you know, I assume one of the subplots they're going to revisit in these next episodes is the whole, like, I wanted a body, like, the whole Miss Minutes, He Who Remains stuff that is made very central in the third episode. And we haven't seen a whole lot of that since. And so presumably that will be key to something that happens in episodes 5 and 6. But it all could be as easily as, like you said, where it's just a general disappointment, like, oh, you didn't turn, you know, I left you the fucking book. Like, this is what you've chosen to become. Like, boring, like you're never going to be like who that, you know, like He Who Remains.
That's a great sort of subplot. That's a great idea. The show hasn't done a great job of setting that up, in my opinion.
The thing that I think it does do well is, excuse me, I love the moment when Obi is concerned over like, well, we have to turn off like the magic damperers, and then it dawns upon, you know, Loki and Sylvie like, yeah, like turn those off, because, and I've mentioned this in previous episodes where like Loki's a god of mischief. Like the fun part, you know, we see this in episode 2 where like use these powers in fun and interesting ways, not cloud of green smoke that arbitrarily does whatever you need it to do for things to be knocked out of the way or for characters to be knocked over. I loved watching the differing personalities and approaches, mostly of Sylvie in this case, like the way that like X5 acts differently when like Sylvie is like in
it's, like, a, it's an so amazing good. Performance by Rafael Casale. Like his like gait is different. His the way his voice is different. Like it's a great performance.
I was so bummed that it was, I mean, sometimes like, you know, it's better to get just a little bit of something and want more, but like, I could have like watched that like encounter go on for a couple of minutes as opposed to like the 30 seconds that we get. But it definitely made me look back on like the attack sequence in episode 2 when they're like shutting down all of the like pruning that's happening, or like the explosions that, like, these characters are like so rich to do something different from a superhero perspective. Their power set is broadly undefined, but just it's like, what's the clever thing you can think of? And this was a moment where like, I just wish they had more moments to do stuff like this, especially when you have two of them, because usually it's just one of them, but them being able to work off one another. I thought it showed like tremendous opportunity for something the show hasn't engaged with in all that much.
Yeah, there's a hilarious moment, as you said, when they shout into the phone, turn off the magic. I'm going to say this very neutrally, Patrick Lepik. Like, are magic dampeners the midichlorians of the TVA universe? Like,
well, because what is magic? What is magic, right? Like, is are Asgardians, like, advanced tech? I mean, I just, like, the nature of
I guess what I'm saying is I always thought that the TVA just existed. It was a plane of existence where magic didn't work.
Right.
But it's actually, apparently, there's, like, literal physical machines that prevent magic from being used.
Do the Infinity Stones, now that the damperers are off?
Right.
Because we see that scene in season 1, right? Where it's like, look at these goofy stones. They don't do anything here.
Are Infinity Stones magic? Like, is that what's going on? But here's the thing. What I think it's genius, too, my guess is we're never going to see a TVA without magic dampeners on for the rest of the season. Like, so it's like they get to play with it a little bit, and then we're not going to have to deal with it again, you know, for the rest of the season. So it's a fun little plot thing. And yeah, Rafael Casal coming in. Rafael Casal, like, basically MVP of the episode, right? Like,
oh, yeah.
Between him watching all his coworkers die and then him pretending, like, him playing, like, Sylvie being inhabiting his body. And then he prunes Renslayer, right?
Yeah.
Everyone else takes off. And then, like, you see kind of Rafael Casal get his wits, like, his... He then comes back into possession of his own body, and you can imagine how confused that guy would be when he's like, I was just hanging out. And then all of a sudden Renslayer is pruned. Everyone is gone. He's by himself. Like, it would be, and he has this really interesting look of confusion on his face. He was just amazing the whole episode. So
yeah, agreed.
Okay. The final task is physically taking the object that will expand the loom out of the blast doors, which are filled with powerful temporal radiation. Loki offers to deliver the object before Timely steps in and announces it's time to be brave. Upon stepping out the blast doors, Timely is turned into temporal spaghetti, dying instantly. Moments later, the loom ominously explodes. Incredible. Incredible. Everything about it is incredible, right?
All-time MCU moment. Like, in a all show time. That, all like, time. If I'm making, like, a top 10, like, you know, WTF moments, like, where one of these movies or shows just nails it. Like, this is one of them. Like, I, not in a million years, like, so, like, different variants of myself. Patrick, what do you think happens when he goes out there? Not a single one of them would have said, I think they're just going to kill the fucker. I think he's just donezo. Like, and the way they do it.
We're going to get, you think you're going to, we're going to get a big, like, tense sequence of him going out there.
I gotta be brave.
And then, like, oh, I slipped. I dropped the thing, and it's going to be on the road. And, like, you know, and something's going to go wrong with the plan. And, you know, It reminds me of, I was watching, I was really upset. You know, this has come up a bunch of times on Decoding TV with you and me, Patrick, but remember 24, the TV show? I was obsessed with that show when I was younger, and I would buy the DVDs and like listen to all the commentaries on 24. And I remember in season two, there was this line of, these characters play Russian roulette in season two of 24. And he said, you know, we've seen a lot of Russian roulette scenes. We've seen good ones. We've seen bad ones. What we haven't seen is characters start playing Russian roulette and person dies instantly. And that's what happens in 24. They start playing Russian roulette and literally the first bullet is live and the guy dies. And I was reminded of that sensibility at the end of this episode when it's like, we've seen a lot of guy going out to fix a thing in space scenes, but what we've rarely seen is he steps outside and he's instantly annihilated.
Just wonk. I mean, no hesitation. Immediately, it's just great because I think it's a great example of, yeah, just like the way you said, this episode in totality is like the best version of the show as it sees itself.
Yeah.
And I think this sort of surprise is the best version of what this show does all the time,
yes,
but often very poorly. Like surprises that like these, that surprise is genuinely not just a like what? It's not just a, like capital S surprising. It also has me going, what does this, like, what am I even watching now? But in a fun way. It's not like it's removes right. context or fills in like backstory, like with Ren's, like it's just, it doesn't mean they're going to stick the landing. I don't know where these next two episodes go, but it's the fun kind of surprise where like they hit you with just a hammer and then you're left wondering, what are they going to do next with this?
Right.
Which is a really exciting place to be in a show that I think we've, you know, liked at various points, not liked at various points, but have been hopeful. Now it's just sort of like, but it's rare that I felt this genuine sort of whoa kind of moment.
Yeah.
And that's a fun place to be, not just relative to the show that we've watched, but also just, you know, okay, if they're feeling this sort of confidence, like hopefully this carries right over into these next two episodes and maybe makes the whole work feel better as a whole when seen in totality. It doesn't fix the problems of the previous episodes, but if there is storytelling confidence going in to these last two, I hope these big swings end up being payoffs as opposed to just, well, and we just on, you know, we're just gonna wipe all that fun stuff, like Timely's there in the next episode and none of that mattered sort of thing. I don't know, but it's a great WTF moment for sure.
I think agree with everything you said. Wonderful moment, and I'm so curious. Like we, as of this recording, have no idea. We don't talk about the next time on previews on this podcast. So like we have no idea what's going to happen.
Do they do those for these shows?
I believe so. Yeah. Okay. So
and there's no post credits. So we have like, no
there's no
idea.
Post credit sequence. Yeah, we have no.
We've
idea
only done that
happen.
Once in the first episode.
Yeah. I do think that if they had done a better job of the Victor Timely like through line, the moment would have been even more shocking, right? Where the idea is like Victor Timely always wants, like, I'm not saying they haven't seeded any of that in there at all, but like the idea of Victor Timely wanting to live up to his full potential as He Who Remains, you know, if that had been like, he's like, I'm finally going to transcend, you know, my fate and it's time to be brave. Like I've always feared the blob, but like, now it's time to be brave. Then it'd be like, oh, wow. The fact that he dies instantly is like even more incredible. All that said, it was already great. It was already incredible.
Well, like, to your point, if you think through Timely and all the times we see this character on screen, how often is Victor Timely talking to people or responding to people?
Right.
Like most of the time he's responding to people because people are telling him something or they're giving him some revelation. It's rare that Victor Timely is expressing a thought that is uniquely his own, working through his own feelings and emotions. Like it's really up on stage explaining like the Loom prototype. That's like the closest we get to how Victor sees himself, presents himself. And the rest of the time that we're around him is him in awe of what's what's surrounding him, shocked at the many, many revelations about who he is and yada, yada. And that's what I mean when, like, moments where, as fun as the not to scale model is, I would have liked like the moment you get with the coffee machine, right? Where he goes off and like futzes with the coffee machine. Yeah, yeah. Like more moments like that where he can sit and there's no reflective moments for him. Like he arrives at the, I'm not going to be that person, this bad person you think I am. I'm going to be brave. Like those conclusions make sense for the character they've drawn, but we don't get enough time with that character itself to express how he got from point A to point B from his perspective. And I think that's what's missing and what makes this like go from being like the reveal, like the moment he's spaghettied is whoa, but emotionally, like we needed like one more episode or like another big scene with just Timely, I think, to let all that land. Like what if him and Obi could have talked and like he could explain like his complicated feelings? I think it would have given that moment more weight.
Put a different way, I think the show is a lot about payoffs and it's less about setup. It has no patience for the setup. It's all about payoffs. You know, the example, I'm just going to list a few examples, right? Like, all the branches are, billions of people are being killed in all these like branching timelines. Boom. That's a payoff. Like no setup. We got to convince General Docs and all her men to come join us. And then like, they're all crushed to death because they decided that's a payoff, but there's no setup for like any of why does General Docs care either way? We barely understand. Like we know she like has allegiance to the TVA, but does she? Because she's in jail right now. In the
she
like,
never explained why she did what she did. We never got a single, not even a like cursory moment of like, why did you think it was cool? To-
right, because my philosophy was blank. And this is why I was praising the moment earlier about like them sharing their philosophies. At least it's an ethos. At least like they're sharing the thoughts. So it's like, it's all about, you know, Victor Timely is annihilated. It's a payoff, but there's no setup as to like why he would feel the need to be really brave, right? Like there's, again, as you said, it makes sense. It's not like completely out of nowhere, but it's just, there's, the show is consistently obsessed with payoffs, no setups. And that really hurts the storytelling, in my opinion. That said, really amazing moments, some all-timer moments in this episode.
Yeah.
The best of what Loki can be. And we'll see if they can all tie it together in the final two episodes.
Do you have any predict? Like, what do you think? What do you think's on the. My prediction and what I think on the other side is actually what Sylvie said earlier when they were having their philosophical discussion, which was maybe we should just, like, what is the Loom accomplishing? We don't actually know what the Loom is. It's taking care of the time, but time presumably existed before the Loom. The Loom is a way of managing time as energy. If you were just to let time go unconstrained, would you just have a proper multiverse in which these other timelines lived their lives like peacefully, alongside one another? Now, granted, that may cause a lot of chaos as an explosion occurs, but I do, that is sort of my theory on like what's about to occur is sort of the like that and that kind of anarchist conclusion has arrived, and we'll just see where the dust settles. It's not the elimination of the multiverse, because the Kang Dynasty is in theory a movie they're still making in a couple of years, but it does seem to like allow them an opportunity to reset the stakes a little bit and maybe talk less about the end of the known universe and more about what motivates these individual characters. But I'm curious where you think it might go.
Well, that's a very plausible outcome, Patrick Klepek. I also think it's entirely possible that something happens in the final two episodes that undoes the events that we've just witnessed, right? That feels like the most, feels like the most likely. Right?
Yeah. All right, Dave, I guess that makes more sense.
Right. I will give a shout out to this. I thought the ending of this episode was also quite beautiful. Like, just from a visual perspective and the way the light shines and the visual conception of the Loom, I think is really cool. And then, by the way, when it ended, I think there was a good Sopranos series finale style. I think there was a good like 10 to 15 seconds of complete silence, black screen, if I recall correctly. Is that, do you remember
and
that?
It's, yeah. And it's nice to see, and this is very hard to pull off when, cynically, just like you said, the expectation should be return to the status quo. And it's hard to create dramatic stakes, especially in like superhero storytelling.
Yes.
Right? Like the fact that they were able to pull off that moment at the end of Infinity War and make like, it's like, okay, I know, like Tom Holland's coming back, like Black Panther, like they're not going away, but like, it's still like, felt like one of the biggest oh shit moments I've had
absolutely
in a movie theater.
Absolutely.
Like, kids crying. I mean, like, just tremendous what they pulled off. And I'm not saying this quite itchies it up. I think it's a very unique moment in, frankly, cinematic history, what they managed to pull off at the end of that film. But I think the way it's shot, like, they really make you sit with.
Yeah.
Like, they lost. Like,
yeah.
They did all the things. They actually, quote, succeeded. And it wasn't enough. And it lets you sit with that for, frankly, a couple of minutes as like, Obi, like, okay, what's like plan Z? There is no plan Z. We're just going to slowly watch this thing envelop us. And I just thought it was like pretty beautifully done because it's difficult to create moments of like genuine failure. Even if you know on the other side is an undo button. It's nice to see them pull that off. Even in a show like this.
Yeah, yeah. Like the fact that you experience any emotional reaction to what's going on is an achievement on their part. And even though we know that the MCU is probably going to continue after this, I have some suspicions. the fact that we still felt like, oh yeah, they had to sit with that. They had time with which to reckon with their own failures before they all were consumed by the exploding temporal loom or whatever. That's an achievement. So really good stuff. Anyway, I think that'll bring it really excited to dive into next week's episode with you. I'm really curious what it's going to be. But until then, you can find more episodes of this podcast at podcast.decodingtv.com. Email us at decodingtv@gmail.com. Find us across all platforms, YouTube, Threads, Instagram, TikTok at decodingtv. And Patrick Klepek's work can be found at Remap Radio, wherever you listen to your podcasts, or at crossplay.news, where he's writing about video games and children and how the two of them can or cannot mix. Patrick Klepek, did you finish Spider-Man 2 yet, by the way?
I'm not. According to the percentage meter, I am 22%.
Oh, wow.
There's a lot of side stuff. There's a lot of
I'm farther than you. Stuff. I'm at 52 at this point, I think.
New Mario game, Alan Wake 2, Spider-Man 2, a lot of twos, a lot of games going on, but also it's such a well done game that I'm in no rush to finish it. But it's exceptionally well done.
Indeed. All right. Well, until next week, we'll see you for another episode of Decoding TV, recapping, reviewing, and discussing Loki. Thanks so much for listening. We'll see you later.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row, dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.